Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
There are many different paths you can take, but there's only one. Road to Atlanta.
The high drive deep out to left field. He clubbed it. Brady twisting and turning, looking up and giving up. It's a home run for Dansby Swanson. Flair out towards shallow right. That's big trouble. Albies going back. He dives and he makes the catch. What a play, Ozzie Albies. Swanson is headed for three. He'll try for an inside the Parker. Relay throw comes toward the plate. He'll score standing, and it's his second inside the park home run of the season.
This is your weekly podcast dedicated to the Atlanta Braves farm system. Follow the show on Twitter at Road, the number 2, Atlanta. Now, hit the road with your hosts, Eric Cole, Gaurav Vidak, and Garrett Spain.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Road to Atlanta, a podcast devoted solely to the Braves farm system and Braves prospects. I am one of your hosts, Eric Cole. You may recognize me from my work over on TalkingChop.com, where I have been, an integral part of the leadership team since 2015 in varying capacities, including the minor league editor since 2015 and the deputy site manager since 2018. Joining me as often to do a special mailbag episode of Road to Atlanta is, you can follow him over on Twitter at BravesMILB. One Garrett Spain. Garrett, how are you, man?
Hey, I'm doing good. Getting prepared. I'm gonna run up to Rome this weekend to check out, you know, Grissom and Harris for the first time this year. I actually haven't been up to Rome at all this year, which isn't normal for me, but I'm excited about that for the last weekend of the year. Just kind of getting wrapped up on the season. It's gone by way too fast. Well, I mean, we still have more AAA to go, but you know, for the main bulk of our stuff.
Yeah, I guess that is kind of the. Yeah, that's kind of the big news, right? It's like, you know, pretty much after this coming week, I mean, the bulk of the minor league season's done. We still have – Gwinnett's going to go on for another 2 weeks after this week. And we'll also have the Mississippi Braves have a playoff run, which, you know, will be interesting to see how that covers, because, you know, we love the pitching staff, the offense. If it shows up, they could make a deep run. If not, well, maybe not so much. So overall, like, you know, it's been a really fun season. I will say that I'm a bit tired. I think part of it is just because since we didn't have a minor league season, like kind of being get back into the grind has been a little bit tougher. Also coming off like the 2020 season on the major league level, where my responsibilities were just again more on the major league side, and we're having to do the podcast every day for a really deep playoff run. And I'm kind of like intimate. You know, I say intimately involved. Our boss Chris Willis kind of handles most of the stuff on the major league side, but you know, I help out here and there and things like that. It's been a long season, so it's gonna be nice to at least have something off my plate, I'll say. But overall, like, you know, that feeling doesn't last very long. Like a couple weeks into the off season for minor league baseball, I'm always like, okay, I need minor league baseball back. So, you know, it'll be good to get a certain amount of rest from the minor league stuff. And again, we'll still be doing coverage. We'll still be doing recaps until the last minor league game's done. But, you know, it will be nice to kind of not be quite as intense as when you have to recap every single game, every single day, with the notable exception of Mondays when we record this podcast. But overall, like, again, it's just, it'll certainly be missed. It'll be nice to have something off the plate, especially if the Braves actually can finish off and make a playoff run, at the major league level as well. So it's just kind of nice to have something to kind of have a little bit of time to, you know, recover a bit. But that's kind of the big news of the week. We did have one promotion. Again, for those who aren't aware, normally what we do is that we break down the minor league levels level by level. We go AAA, AA, it's the high A and single A, or low A rather. But this particular podcast, what we're doing is we're doing a bit of a mailbag, which is going to be a grab bag of all different types of topics. There's going to be certainly a strong minor league focus, but some people have, like, you know, like those, you know, who's going to be, you know, in the minor league, you know, the outfield for the major leagues from the minors, you know, in 2022, 2023, stuff like that. But generally there's a very strong minor league focus to that, but it's a big grab bag of all sorts of different questions from folks, and we're going to take those one by one, again, in no particular order or, you know, organization or anything like that. But before we get to that, Garrett, we did have one promotion down in the minor leagues, a slightly surprising one, but, you know, we don't necessarily mind a guy being challenged in his draft gear. Talk to us a little bit about the Dylan Dodds promotion.
Yeah, he definitely was pushed up to Rome. I was thinking that, I mean, I had said it, like, literally 2 days before it happened. I was like, he'll probably finish out the year I think I said it on the podcast last week. I was like, he could probably finish out the year at Augusta, and then he might get like one game at Rome. They went ahead and pushed him up, and he was definitely overwhelming hitter, low A hitters at that point. But it's definitely a quick promotion. I mean, normally guys, even top guys, don't get to high A in their first year. I mean, they haven't put Cusick up there yet, so it's an aggressive guy. Push for an older player. He was a senior sign. He did not look very good in his first start. We're going to kind of excuse that a little bit because it was his first start at a level. They were playing in Asheville, which is a bandbox of a park, and they it's his draft year. He kind of had a long layoff. He's been rusty overall. Even his good starts weren't fantastic all the time. So his first start, he gave up 4 home runs and like 8 runs in 2 innings or something. It was either 2 or 3 innings. It wasn't a very good start. But other than that, I mean, he's gotten better. He got better in each of his starts in Augusta. He had a hiccup here, and hopefully this next start, I think he's probably going to start Friday, either Thursday or Friday. Hopefully that one will be a better start than this one. He'll actually be at home this time and not in Nashville, which is definitely a positive in that regard. And I like – overall, we've gotten a good feel for his stuff, a better feel than we had before. So I think on our side, we kind of feel confident with him. And like whatever he does this year, draft year stuff, you can't look into it too much. So, you know, I think it says a lot about how they feel about him that they are willing to push him so quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. We actually heard after the fact when he was drafted that, you know, it seemed like that Dodd was a hot commodity coming out of the draft. Like, you know, he was like one of the top senior sign guys. I mean, like when you have the kid out of Arkansas who's kind of like the darling of the College World Series, and you know, everyone was kind of talking about him as a senior sign, is like kind of like one of the deals of the draft. It sounded like that if the Braves didn't pick Dodd where they picked him, that like he was going to be gone within a couple picks. And again, that speaks a lot to, you know, kind of where the, not only where the Braves thought about, where just like the league kind of thought of him overall. So it was, again, nice to see that he, you know, is both in the organization and had looked pretty good, I'll say, down in Augusta. I wouldn't say he would look like particularly awesome. He was certainly missing some bats, but he was also kind of, you know, had some more rougher starts here and there. Some of those numbers that he put up in Augusta were aided by what I will consider a less than optimal bullpen. And you know, if there were inherited runners late in starts, they're pretty much guaranteed to be put across home plate. Unfortunately, this start that he made for Rome in his debut there at High A did not go well. 3 innings, 9 hits, 8 earned runs, 4 home runs in, again, a bandbox of a park in Asheville. That's a place where a lot of home runs go out. And but with 6 strikeouts, so I guess he has that going for him. Still striking out a pair of batters per inning. In your draft year, you're going to have some rough starts here and there. That was unfortunately a rough one for him. Hopefully he can get things, you know, back under wraps for his final start of the year. But overall, nothing we're super concerned about. Still a really interesting pitch mix guy who, like, for a senior sign has a lot more upside than we certainly normally see out of those types of senior sign types. So, overall, just, you know, again, not the best start, but hopefully he can kind of get back on track for this, last one. So let's get into the mailbag sort, because we have a whole range of questions. I was like kind of just like perusing through those while you were talking a little bit about Dodd, and we're kind of all over the place on this mailbag. And I'm kind of here for it. It's going to be a lot of fun. The first question is pretty indicative of that. Basically, we got a bit of a random grab bag of players that are kind of on the periphery of our top 30. I would say some are, you know, some are in and some are on the outside looking in here. But the question is, if any, which of these players has the best chance to be a top 10 prospect in the system? And the players that were chosen were Caden Morton, Adam Shoemaker, Stephen Paolini, Tyler Collins, and Brandal Mosquita. I have pretty strong thoughts about who I think it is, but I'm going to go ahead and tee you up first.
I think for sure for me, Morton, Paolini, Mosquita are kind of guys that could get there, but eventually are kind of long shots. So for me, it's between Shoemaker and Collins. And based on what Collins has done this year, I mean, it's clearly him. I mean, I think we prefer hitters over pitchers just because pitchers are at every level. Pitchers can be fragile and tend to explode quickly. So Collins is definitely the guy there for me. I like Shoemaker a lot. He's one of those guys that, after the draft, I dug into him and I liked a lot what I saw out of him. But right now, I mean, it's definitely Collins. He's killing the ball down in there. I think he's, you know, got the athleticism we want to see. He's a guy that's going to stick up the middle, play, hopefully play good defense. We haven't gotten to see his defense yet. Hopefully he plays good defense. He has the athleticism to do so. And as long as he keeps hitting, I mean, he's on his way there. I'm not going to say that, you know, I'm not going to say that he's definitely going to be there one day, but he's got a better chance than most guys that you see of getting to that point.
Yeah, you focused on the two guys that I did too. I mean, like, look, I have nothing against Morton or Powell. I mean, I still have quiet hopes for Stephen Paolini down the road. Still a very raw prospect, and, you know, just, again, really, really, like, a tough year. Particularly the first half of the season was just really, really bad. And Mosquito is just not a guy that I think is necessarily in that conversation. But with Shoemaker and Collins are two guys that have a lot of upside. In Shoemaker's case, I think that the issue I have with him potentially being a top 10 guy is that he's so raw right now that it's hard to project that for him. I'm not saying he couldn't get there, but I'm a little bit more wary in his particular case. I think that there's real upside there. And like, if he ended up as like a ninth overall prospect in a few years in the system and with that fastball already where it is right now, and, you know, he develops those secondaries, the breaking ball continues to improve, that I wouldn't be shocked by that. Like, you know, big framed kid, like seeing a guy like that with those kind of physical attributes develop wouldn't be super surprising to me, but there's also a lot of risk with that. But in Collins' case, he just has, like, he's crazy fast, a ton of athleticism. We're hearing that he's hitting the ball hard down there. You know, he's certainly racking up some extra base hits here and there, but, you know, how much of that is just him being so fast that, you know, like these guys down there in the Florida Coast League, they just aren't getting the balls quick enough to really prevent him from just, you know, taking extra bases at will. And how much of that is that he's putting balls, like they're true doubles, they're true triples, things like that. So I'm very curious to see where he ends up in a couple years. But in terms of like that overall package, and, you know, you combine that with just, you know, he got that higher bonus pool on day two. He's a kid that the Braves really kind of, I mean, on draft night, he was like the comp that was put on him was like a young Kenny Lofton, which is really high praise, really, really, really high praise. And again, see if that hit tool continues to develop, see if he can continue to show that. If he continues to show the hit tool with that speed and, you know, showing some patience at the plate, like, he'll be a top 10 prospect very quickly. But, you know, again, with prep bats, there's certainly a bit of risk there, but I just think there's slightly less risk, or at least there's a greater probability that that turns into a top 10 guy in the system as opposed to Shoemaker, whereas the other three guys are lagging behind, and I think it's a pretty good bet. Now, on the opposite end of the spectrum, instead of talking about guys who are really raw and we don't know a ton about quite yet, we have a question about a guy that we have certainly been covering for a long time now, and that is, will you elaborate on the year Drew Waters is having and what do you expect him to be as a Brave? And then he says, thanks, and you're welcome. So, Garrett, talk to me a little bit about I know that you've been kind of talking a lot about Drew Waters, you've written about him, kind of where are you at with him right now?
He's been always been streaky, but this year in particular, it's like he'll go two or three games and be really good, and then he'll go like a week and be absolutely dreadful. I think a lot of his performance was he's had some nagging injuries here and there. I do think that that's hurt his performance. But I think it's really a transitional year for him. It's kind of been a transitional year for him in every aspect of his game. He's kind of learning to rein in, be more selective about when he is Drew Waters, just that really outrageously aggressive player. And so you're seeing him kind of adjust to how he approaches the game on the base pass, adjust how he plays center field, and kind of work on his approach at the plate. And so I think it's been a bad year for him overall. There have been good moments. He had a great July. He started to strike out a lot less. Towards the end of the year, he's kind of had, again, periods where he doesn't strike out a lot, periods where he does. So it's overall not been a good year, but it's not been one of those years where you say, like, this has significantly impacted his stock going forward. I think it's a learning process for him. And even though he is at AAA, I think he's more raw than most AAA players, just in that he got pushed up very quickly and he's always had those approach issues. There were things that I wanted to see out of him that he didn't do in terms of his power coming in more, his, you know, cutting back on the strikeouts. There are things that he did do that I wanted him to do in terms of getting more efficient on the base pass, playing making fewer mistakes defensively, drawing more walks. So it's kind of, it's been a mixed bag. As for what I expect him to be as a Brave, an average to above average starter. I mean, there's definitely potential to be far more than that, and there is definitely potential to be far less than that. But right now, I think the center bet is, you know, a 2 to 2.5 win player. And if he can cut back on the strikeouts or add a little bit more pop out of that raw power, he could be way more than that. But right now, I think kind of expecting to be an average player is just, you know, what you got to see, which is not an insult. Saying that a guy is going to be average is never an insult on a guy. That's being an average MLB player means that you're a really, really, really good baseball player. And so I like Drew a lot, but he's kind of had his weaknesses exposed a lot this year, which you expected from more experienced pitchers.
So I have personally downgraded Drew. I expect to have him at least a couple spots lower on my prospect list once we do our preseason list. Obviously, we have to kind of get more information about like kind of the guys that are ranked around him before I can kind of make that decision fully. But my problem is that he strikes me as a hitter, as a guy who doesn't know what kind of hitter he wants to be and seems confused as to what he should be doing on a at-bat-to-at-bat basis. It seems like one at-bat he's like going to be desperately trying to draw a walk and is, you know, only gearing towards contact. And as a result, like a lot softer contact when he puts the ball in play and he's just not unable to kind of do anything. Or there's times where he wants to be super aggressive and is like trying to kill the baseball. And you know, every once in a while that works out, but more often than not, you know, those are those kind of those 3 and 4 strikeout games that we see from him. He has made some, you know, the walk rate has certainly been nice, and he's had some like good games here and there, but it seems to me he just doesn't know what he wants to be as a hitter. And that's problematic when you have both he's young and it's kind of something we forget about that as a switch hitter. Like that's just a greater amount of workload and like kind of how you're having to see pitches and getting used to like how your body moves and things like that. Just there's more work to getting your swing where you want it to be and being consistent when you are a switch hitter, because you just have two different swings that you're working on, and combine that with like, you know, some like, seems like there's some issues with like just kind of his general approach. I think there's some pitch recognition issues. He can look really bad on pitches that are like kind of down and in. If like he just guesses the speed wrong, you'll see some of the worst swings in minor league baseball. If he thinks it's fastball and it's off speed, like it's not like he barely swung through that, or he just didn't quite time that up. I mean, he won't even be close. So I'm just not sure what to make of him, because again, I still love the physical attributes, and I think that, you know, he has a track record of hitting all the way up to AAA, and this year has been bad. The point that you made about the injuries is a good one. We don't really know how much that has impacted him. He's like missed time here and there for stretches, and like, you know, he seems like they're giving him days off fairly regularly. And is that just to have him work on stuff, or is that they're trying to manage something that's really bothering him? I don't have the answer to that question. I just don't. But I do suspect that maybe there's something else going on there too, which just kind of all adds up to a pretty rough year. And that's unfortunate, because again, for a guy with his physical attributes, and you know, we like Drew a lot as a human being, he's hilarious. And then as a player, we think he has a lot of potential. But I think you're right. Like I'm actually of the opinion right now that I'm not certain he becomes a Brave. I think it's more likely that he ends up being a trade piece, because there's just, the combination of Christian Pache really kind of figuring things out to play, he's been really good. And, you know, he has kind of a spot as a center fielder that I think he certainly is a better defender than Drew is in center. And that's not a knock on Drew at all. Drew's a really good defender, but Pache is just special out there. And if they feel like that Pache has really made some strides as a hitter, that he's going to get a shot. And then in that case, unless they really think that Ronnie's going to be out for a long time and they really need that extra bat, and then you have other guys coming up behind, you know, Drew, like Michael Harris is an example, you know, maybe they could see him as expendable, and maybe they don't see the development that they need to see from him, and maybe that they think that a change of scenery would be good for him, and they can get some real value for him in a trade or something like that. Now, we have not seen Alex Anthopoulos make a trade of a player of this caliber, but at the same time, I wouldn't be shocked at this point if maybe he ends up going elsewhere, just because there's enough weirdness that makes me think that maybe there's something going on behind the scenes that maybe the Braves don't have as much confidence in him as maybe we do. And I also think that just that, and combined with just the availability of spots and things like that, you know, there's a lot that goes into that decision, whether or not there's going to be a DH next year, whether or not Marcell Ozuna is actually going to be playing at the start of the season and all that stuff. So those are all considerations to be sure. But right now, the answer is I certainly think that the season has kind of diminished him in my eyes a bit, but there's a lot of reasons why that could be, and some of those could be fairly short term. So for the next question, we got to move a little faster, otherwise this is going to be an hour and a half long podcast, what is your level of concern for Ian Anderson after his last outing? 9 strikeouts helps, but the changeup seems to be a shell of itself right now. What do you think?
I mean, he's coming off a shoulder injury, so it's really, really hard to judge that, right? Because even if you say, oh, he's 100% healthy, he's back from the shoulder injury, that never goes away. That doesn't go away in a few weeks. Like, that's going to be... That's going to be something that gets dealt with in the offseason. So I don't think that he's 100% healthy. I don't think that anybody is, but definitely a guy coming off a shoulder injury. I don't want to read too much into 2 or 3 starts right after a shoulder injury. That's just, it's not fair to him. And also he's a guy that's had intermittent issues with grip in the past, which can definitely affect a changeup. And so especially, you know, a shoulder injury does significantly affect your ability to grip a ball a lot of times. And so when you have a guy coming off of a shoulder injury, especially, I mean, his last start was in, was his last start in Colorado or was his last start at home? I don't know. All the games run together at this point. But you know, one of the starts was in Colorado, which like that's already kind of a tough place to play. Overall, I'm not reading too much into it. I just don't think that he's 100% healthy right now, and I don't think that he's going to be until he gets time off this offseason. It's just that's how shoulders are. You just have to take the time off.
Yeah, so I have a couple thoughts here. One is that he did make a start at Colorado. He also started at home against Miami, which, again, wasn't a bad start, but, again, the changeup wasn't quite as crisp as you'd like it. But I would not take anything super negative away from 5 innings with 9 strikeouts, if that makes any sense. We've seen games like that from Ian where he's less than efficient, but he misses a bunch of bats. And again, only really the one bad pitch was a truly ill-advised one to Jesus Aguilar in that particular bat. But beyond that, I think he looked fine. I do wonder if, you know, he's completely healed up. It's worth noting that this isn't the first time that Ian's dealt with shoulder issues. He did have an issue in Rome where it's just like he had a certain amount of soreness in his shoulder, so it's certainly worth keeping an eye on. And, you know, again, the points that Garrett made were good ones, that he might not be completely healthy. Another thing to consider is, one, it's just rust. You know, like a changeup is a really a feel pitch, and you know, when you don't have – you're not maybe, you know, quite back in your groove and things like that, that's one of the pitches that's kind of the hardest to get back, because that's one you have to really have kind of feel for to kind of get the action that you want and put in the spots that you want to, in, you know, based on the matchups, things like that. So, you know, that's not that surprising that would be a pitch that would struggle. And also something that's worth mentioning, too, is that even if he's completely healthy, like, he still remembers hurting. And as a result, that might mean maybe his mechanics are a little bit out of whack. And, you know, maybe he's not uncorking things as much as maybe he could because he's just kind of preserve himself, or he's just, you know, again, just a little bit of hesitancy. And again, that's just human nature. There's nothing particularly weird about that, right? It's just, and, you know, I think that I thought that the start against Miami was a step forward, whereas in Colorado, I mean, a lot of weird stuff happens in Colorado, especially for a guy like Ian who doesn't have like crazy spin. When you already don't have crazy spin rates and then you're going to that thin air in Colorado, you know, weird things can happen, particularly when you're trying to locate your pitches because you think that you're going to get the movement that you think you'd normally do and you don't there. That's just a kind of a known problem there. Next up, this is kind of a short and sweet question. What are the odds that Mike Morath is the big league pitching coach next year? What do you think, Garrett?
I would bet against it. I don't think that, unless something like horrible happens, I don't really think that they're going to make many coaching changes next year. I just don't see it happening. I would like to see it. I just don't expect it.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. I am a big Mike Morath proponent. I think he needs to be on the big league coaching staff. I don't know if he'll get the major league, like the actual pitching coach position. I think that the struggles that the Braves have had on the pitching side, I don't think that they blame Kranz for. I think that there is reason to think that maybe they should blame Kranz a little bit for it in some respects. And I think that the issue I have is that I think that Morath would just be better. I think he would be an upgrade. I think that he would be able to manage guys start to start and bullpen guys appearance to appearance better than what Kranitz does. I think that he'd be better for game planning as well. And just like, I just think he'd be better. I just don't know if Snitker feels negatively enough about the work that Kranitz has done, as well as the front office to, especially if the Braves make a, if the Braves go to the playoffs this year and, you know, put up a pretty decent performance, you know, with all the injuries they've had, I don't think it's likely that they're going to make a lot of changes. But I think that one of the reasons that they've been as successful as they have been this year is that guys, as they immediately have come back from Gwinnett, for the most part, have performed well. There's been exceptions to that, obviously, but largely we, it seems like when they go down to Mike Moroth, good things happen when they come back. It's just, that's just how it is. And I just think that he would be better at the job, but I don't necessarily think there's a great chance that that's what happens, even if that's what I really would like to happen. So for the next question, for left field and center field from 2023 to 2025, how many positions seasons out of a six total possible? I'm not sure if the math really checks out on that, but I'll have to look on the second. I see. Okay. Out of a total of six possible, do you see the Braves filling internally at a contending level? This is assuming that Ozuna is gone, whether that be DH or not playing with the team anymore, and assuming Acuna in right field. So basically assuming that only Acuna is a lock for those three seasons, right? So that would be of the nine possible seasons. We know that for two of them, or for three of them, Acuna is in a spot. So that's six remaining spots. How many do we think that the Braves will fill internally? And how many do we think that maybe they go outside the organization to fill over the next 3 years? Or from 2023 to 2025, rather. Not next year, I guess.
Well, I think that Pache is pretty much a lock for one of those. Unless he just completely falls short of what... I mean, he doesn't even have to be an average hitter to get that spot. Like, as long as he is just playably good in as a hitter, he's getting... 22, he's getting it next year and he's going to keep it until his contract runs out. I mean, that's just what it is. For the other position, I think we'll see Michael Harris by 2025. 2024 is a little iffy. I mean, he'd be 23 at that point, so it's fairly likely we see him at that point, but it's definitely not a lock. You know, there's some development to his game, but I do think by 2025 he will be there. So that's at least four. 2024, it's probably 50-50 that he's there. You know, Drew Waters has a chance to get that spot. I do think that – I think that in the near future, they're probably going to go externally. I just don't think – like you said earlier, I don't think that they trust Drew enough to just say, this is your job. Have fun with it. So I think that more than likely, it's like 50-50 someone's going to be there in 2023 and then again in 2024 – 2025, definitely, I think that they're pretty much going to fill everywhere internally unless two of the three between Pache, Waters, and Harris flame out. You're probably going to see two of them there. So, yeah, that's kind of what I see. And also want to throw in, I would expect, unless he does not do as well as I think, I would bet in favor of one of those bench positions going to Justin Dean in terms of what he can do defensively. And
I could see it.
I could see that happening. Now, I mean, that wasn't the question, but I do want to say that, you know, in terms, I don't think he's going to be one of the three stars. I don't think that he can hit well enough to do that, but I do think that he might be another one in terms of throwing another guy in there that could be in the outfield rotation in the future.
Yeah, I could see 4 to 5. That seems about right. I think that Pache will end up playing center field for a while. He'd have to hit pretty poorly to not, like, play those three seasons, if that makes any sense. There's certainly a certain amount of skepticism for Waters. Obviously, we really like Michael Harris, which puts us kind of in that 4 to 5 range. I wouldn't be surprised, as an example, that maybe they move slow with Mike and they sign a guy for, like, a two-year deal or something like that that will play – like that 2023 season, and then maybe if Harris is ready, you know, that puts it he goes up in 2024, and if he's not, then, you know, maybe. But I'm not going to project names this far out because, frankly, I don't know who the free agents are or who would even be available for trade, things like that. And a lot of things can change with trades and things like that. But overall, my guess is 4 to 5, and, you know, with the usual injury caveats and all that stuff too. A lot of weird stuff can happen. I mean, I wouldn't have expected that Abraham Almonte and Guillermo Redio would have played as much in the outfield as they did this year. But again, it was a weird year. And, you know, same thing for goes like, you know, are guys like Adam Duvall going to still be around? Are they going to try to sign a deal with guys like, you know, like a Jock Peterson or a Jorge Soler, you know, guys like that. So, I mean, I don't necessarily think those are super likely, but at the same time, those are all kind of considerations too. I just do think that like 4 to 5 seasons of those 6 possible that you mentioned, with Acuna being a lock, assuming he's healthy for those 3, that's where I'm at too. For the next question, who are some guys this year like CJ Alexander who are close to dropping to the bottom of the list or going off of it going into next season?
The first one that's fairly obvious is Jacel de la Cruz. He just has not been right since the beginning of the year. He just hasn't been very good. And unless he significantly turns it around, he's not going to be starting next year at all. He is going to be moved to the bullpen immediately. And we don't put bullpen guys in our top 30. We just don't. So I don't.
Yeah, it's pretty rare, yeah.
I would say it's more likely than not that he will not be on the top 30 come midseason next year. It's at this point, it might even be sketchy that he'll make the preseason list. I think he probably will, but it will be the back end. Another guy would be Trey Harris, which we all loved coming in this year, right? We love Trey. And as a person, we adore Trey. He's great. He's a really cool dude. We love him to death, but he just hasn't hit. And until he hits, he's going to keep going down that list because that's what's carrying him. It's his ability to hit. He doesn't have enough power, enough defense, enough speed to really not hit to his full potential. So unless he starts to hit, he's going to drop very, very quickly because he is an older guy. He's either 24 or 25 now. He's, you know, not the best defender. He's probably going to be stuck in a corner outfield spot, and he's just not hitting, and that's not a good combination right now, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's not great. Those are 2 good names. Another one that I think is pretty much a lock to not be on the top 30, which is kind of unfortunate because I liked him for kind of having one of the better cutters I've seen in our minor league system is Hayden Deal. He's been moved to the bullpen, which is kind of a less than ringing endorsement, I guess, of kind of what they think of him as a starter. And, you know, again, I think that as a reliever, he could be interesting, but he's not going to be like a lockdown guy. And he certainly hasn't been that as a reliever so far. He's come in and he's done pretty well there, and that's perfectly fine. But he's a guy that I think is not going to be on the top 30 as well. So those 3 names are kind of the easy answers there. A guy that I'm kind of like circling and wondering a bit about is Victor Vodnik, just in terms of staying healthy. Cause I think at some point that it might be likely that he ends up in the bullpen, and I don't think that he'll fall off preseason. I don't think so. I think there's enough guys on our staff who would think that, you know, if he's a starter, he could be really, really good. And that is certainly a reasonable position to take, but I'm far more skeptical there. And I think that by midseason, especially if he's pitching out of the bullpen, that we might be have to reevaluate where he is just on our list in general. He's a kind of another guy. So maybe not going into next season, but during the season, he's a guy that I could see, you know, falling off the list and things like that. And a lot of the draft year guys too is worth mentioning, like the guys that we had kind of in that back end of the top 30 right now, like, you know, the Cal Connollys of the world, you know, all that other stuff. They show up and they don't hit, or they can't pitch, or they really, really struggle. Like I could see those guys just not, you know, just not being on the list either. So those are kind of guys that we are going to have to kind of evaluate closely. But, you know, the names that have been like the usual suspects that have been around for a while, the 3 that I mentioned are the 3 guys who are the most likely to fall. The next question is, who could be next year's Spencer Strider? I'm going to go ahead and say that it's incredibly unlikely that there's just another Spencer Strider next year, because he went from unranked to in the top 6. And that's a big jump to make, and one that we had to kind of be careful about a little bit. But overall, you know, I don't think it's likely that anybody does. But Garrett, who are some names that you think could make big, big jumps next year?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of a guy jumping like Spencer Strider, I mean, the only 2 that have made jumps that significant were, we saw Ozzy Albies do it, and we saw Acuna do it, which Acuna was ranked before he made his jump, so it's not even a fair comparison. It's just very rare to do it, and, you know, it's very rare to do that, and so it's like, the other 2 guys that did it were guys that we knew nothing about before they started playing for the Braves, right? Like, we knew nothing about them as amateurs, and so it's hard to predict a guy we know nothing about doing really well, right? I mean, in terms of guys that are lower ranked guys or unranked guys that could make it, well, all of them are unranked. Well, one of them might be at the back end of the list. I'll have to check our list.
Yeah, Shoemaker made it.
Okay, so Adam Shoemaker, I mentioned, I put on my thing is, we don't know enough about him right now to say. So he's a guy that he has the body to do it. If he comes in throwing harder, he can make a big jump. I think it's very unlikely for him. Rodri Munoz was a guy we loved at the beginning of the year. He has not stayed healthy. He has not been consistent at all, but the fastball is legit there. And so if the secondary stuff takes a step forward, the command takes a step forward, he could make a massive leap up the list. Another one is a guy we've talked about a few times. I think he's made the last two honorable mentions list is William Woods. He is starting with Rome right now. He has a great fastball. The secondary stuff, again, like Munoz, it's got to come. And it isn't there yet. And Woods is probably more similar to Strider in that he is an older guy. And so if he pitches well, they're going to push him. So I don't expect any of these guys to take that step forward. But these are the three guys that if they come in, you know, if Shoemaker adds the velocity and if Woods and Munoz can kind of add secondary pitches, which sounds very simple, but it's very, very hard. Those guys could make jumps like that, but it's just so hard to predict a guy coming out of nowhere to be a top, you know, six prospect. It just doesn't happen enough.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And again, like it's definitely a weird situation too. Like, for example, if you look at like a Spencer Schwellenbach, who we had as, you know, a fairly highly ranked player, as a highly rated draft prospect, obviously goes Tommy John surgery. I expect that he'll get downgraded a decent bit on our preseason list. And then let's say that the timeline, they seem to have a pretty aggressive timeline for his return. And let's say he comes back next year and by the end of the season is like shoving and has pitched all of his way to double A, then maybe we need to reevaluate that. So there's like a situation there where that kind of, there's a similar jump, just a different path to get there because he's going to fall down first. But overall, like, it's hard to predict a jump like Strider's because, like, we would never have thought that was going to happen. It's unlikely to happen, I think, based on the amount of information that we have at this point. Again, I could see some, like, you know, IFA guys that we just don't know much about or guys from the Florida Coast League that we just don't know much about, and they come in and they go through instructs, and all of a sudden they just get a year older, a year stronger, and good things start happening. Another guy is, like, that could go really in either category for these last two questions – is Mekhi Backstrom. I don't think that necessarily Mekhi Backstrom's a top 30 prospect in the system right now. I don't think he should. I'm not sure he should be just because we have not seen that output from him. But he's also a guy that, like, let's say that we downgrade him, which probably makes a certain amount of sense, right, based on his production right now. And he's, like, either a back-end top 30 guy or a guy that falls off the list. But then he, like, goes to Augusta and, you know, just mashes. I could see a situation where he'd jump up really high too. So we just have to, those are kind of the names that I look at too, is kind of the guys that who could jump, even if it's not necessarily a guy that has been completely off our radar. Maybe it's a guy who just bounces back. Cause like Freddie Tarnock made a pretty big jump this year is another example. One last question before we go to our break is, and we'll just kind of answer this one pretty quickly, is are both Pache and Waters locks to finish the year in AAA? This one seems pretty easy. Go ahead, Garrett.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that – well, definitely Waters is going to stay in AAA all year. I mean, I think Pache will definitely finish out the AAA year. I could see him being a guy that they call up for the postseason roster as a defensive replacement. I think that they have so many outfielders. There's no reason to do it, right? Like, unless somebody gets hurt, what's the reason in calling him up? Because you have a guy like Heredia that can play that – when Jock Peterson is in there in the eighth inning, you can say, all right, go play center field and – let's finish this game out, right? Like, I mean, I would love for Pache to be that guy, but right now I'd rather have a better bat in Heredia. So I don't see it happening, but I do see that I think there's a possibility with Pache that he could be there. Waters is not happening. No chance.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. There's 40-man considerations with Waters, too. Pache already being on the 40-man roster, if someone gets hurt, I could see Pache getting called back up, but especially if the AAA, after the AAA season ends, if something happens, but overall, like, not a super likely possibility whatsoever. I'd say it's very low for Pache and Waters. I just don't think there's any chance at all that he ends up anywhere other than AAA. Before we get to the rest of the questions, we're going to take a quick break to listen to a word from our sponsors. All right, Garrett, let's knock out these last few questions. We had a whole lot of great questions this week, by the way, guys. So we really appreciate all these questions and the support for the podcast just in general. We like getting all this engagement from you guys. So again, just thanks again for all like the nice wide range of questions. And that kind of leads us into like this next question, which is, always an interesting consideration is, who do you predict will get invited to the Arizona Fall League from the Braves organization? Garrett, who do you think is going to be in the NFL?
I'm always terrible at predicting this. I pretty much,
you're really bad at it. Yeah.
I went with guys that missed time this year. So I actually don't have him on my list here, but William Woods, he missed a lot of time. He could be a guy that goes. I put Freddie Tarnock on there because he is a guy that in this stage of his career, he missed some time earlier in the season. He's been fantastic this year. I could see him as a guy that they put there to see, like, what do we have going into next year with this guy? I put Drew Waters on there. I don't think it would happen, but, like, I wanted to fill out five names. So I figured, like, maybe they want to see what's going to happen with him. I don't see it happening, but I wanted to fill out five names. I put Braden Shumake on there because he's missed some time, too, this year, and he's kind of had a weird year. I could see them doing that with him. I mean, just to try to
– he's basically had 1.5 good months.
Right, and it. Like, and with him, like, they have to decide pretty quickly – whether he is going to be the guy at shortstop or else that they have to extend Dansby for at least a couple of years, right? Because there's no one after Shumake until you get to Grissom, and even he might not stay at shortstop. So they kind of have to figure out what Shoemake's going to be, and pretty quickly. The guy definitely – a couple guys I actually am pretty – more confident than not that they would. Indigo Diaz, they send relievers a fairly good bit out there, and he is a guy that – again, you want to see what he's going to do. You want to see him against better competition. He is a guy that could be with the Braves next year, right? Like, he could be with the Braves next year, so they're going to want to see what he can do. The other guy I put is Drew Campbell. There's always one guy. Every year there's one guy that we're like, what? And that's going to – I mean, Campbell missed so much time this year. I could see him being the guy, being an older player. I could see them going with Campbell as the guy there. Again, I'm going to be wrong on every single – I pretty much just listed guys that are not going to make the AFL because I'm so bad at this. So you can pretty much go down this list and say, okay, that guy's not going to be there, that guy's not going to be there, and that guy's not going to be there. But that's my horrible guess at the AFL guys.
Yeah, so I have thoughts here, and like Garrett made some notes here that I think are good ones. I think that it's less likely for starting pitchers – in general, to get invited to the AFL. I just don't think it's particularly likely unless they miss time. So, like, Tarnock going to the AFL would not be a crazy notion to me. William Woods would not be a crazy notion to me because they're guys who have missed time and maybe you want to get them some innings that they weren't able to get this year, right? But I don't think, like, Spencer Strider is going to go. I don't see any of the college, like, the last couple of classes of, like, you know, the Bryce Elders, the Jared Schusters. I don't see Ryan Cusick going. I think that they manage a lot of those, like, the 2021 draft class. They, whatever happens this year, that's it. And then they kind of just go straight to whatever they're going to do for instructs and let them have a full off season of rest before they kind of start entertaining the idea of sending them to the Arizona Fall League. I just don't think that's particularly likely. Like, there's an outside chance that someone like Mueller or something like that ends up going. I just don't think that's particularly great use of his time. But, you know, again, something to think about there. Like a Nolan Kingham wouldn't be particularly crazy to me, but, you know, again, that's a guy who's pitched a lot of innings this year. Doesn't necessarily, I don't see a great need for it. Indigo Diaz, I think might be one of the most likely options just because, again, they like to send relievers out there and they, you know, he's a guy that could be in the big leagues next year. And if that's the case, you give him those extra innings out there in the AFL, see what he can do. And if he continues to slay guys, you send him into spring competing for a bullpen spot. And he might very well just win it on the spot. You know, Shoemaker's a possibility. I'm, again, a little bit more skeptical on that end. I could see Michael Harris getting an invite and going. Just because I think that, again, for position players, I think that he's kind of an interesting piece there. A player that could very well get invited and go is Shea Langeliers. And the reason for that is that they, like, there's just a shortage. Like, we saw Joseph Odom get a really callback for a few years ago. Joseph Odom got an invite to the Arizona Fall League, and we would have never bet in a million years because he wasn't particularly good. But there's just such a shortage for catchers, and if they think that those extra at bats would do Langelier some good, then he'll have a spot available to him. Like, he'll get an invite. It's just whether or not they choose to send him or not. The downside there is that Chase caught a lot of games this year, and what's the benefit of sending him when he's already at Double A and he's doing what he's been doing at Double A? I'm not sure what the benefit necessarily is there. Another guy who I could see is a guy who could go could be is Jesse Franklin. Not because he's missed time this year necessarily, but because I think that because he played so little over the previous couple of years, they would make a certain amount of sense to at least give him a try out there. But he seems like he's gassed a little bit in this last month, so I'm not sure if that's even the wise choice either. So overall, like, I think that some of the names that Garrett mentioned, particularly Tarnock and Indigo, are good ones. I think there's zero chance that Drew Campbell gets I'm sorry. I just don't see there's any chance that he goes. So I guess we can go ahead and pencil him in as on the AFL roster, since both Garrett and I think that, you know, he have mentioned him in some capacity. If we feel strong feelings about it, he just ends up going, because I just don't think that there's any chance that happens, because I don't think he's highly regarded enough. I think that there's, you know, for those outfield spots, I just don't think that's where the direction they would go. The next question, and this is a short and sweet one. What are the odds that we see Indigo Diaz in 2021? You're right. This will be quite short. So, Garrett, you're up.
I'm going to be aggressive and say 80%. I like him a lot, and I think that he's the next guy. Like
in 2021.
Oh, 2021. Oh, 0%. He's not coming. They're not bringing him up this year. He'd already be in AAA.
I was about to say, Garrett.
I thought that said 2022. I'm sorry. No, 2021. That's not happening. Not happening.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you there. So, yeah, I don't think there's any chance. It would, like, they even have a guy in Dylan Lee who's pitched well. I mean, I don't think much of him as a relief prospect, but he's pitched well at Gwinnett, and he hasn't gotten opportunities there. They have guys that are, like, starting pitching prospects that, like, are on the 40-man roster they could use in the bullpen. I get why people want Indigo, because he's been really good. We love Indigo, but it's 2022 for him. I just think that there's, I'm not going to say 0% chance, because weird stuff does happen, but it's like single digits for sure, 100%. So the next question, and we've actually touched on him a little bit, but I'll give you a chance to kind of talk to you a little bit more about him. What are our thoughts on Tyler Collins? Because they seem to really like his production in the Florida Coast League. What do you think about Tyler?
I think about what I thought about, you know, I think a little bit, you know, seeing him hit as a professional definitely helps for me. Seeing him hit the ball hard as a professional helps for me. But I think it's pretty much the same story that we had coming into the season. You know, don't ever read anything into complex league numbers, because they're always weird. I like to see him hit, but more it's, you know, the same thing I thought about him. He's going to have a decent bat. He's got a ton of speed, and we'll see how the power comes for him. And that's just kind of where I am on him. I mean, he has gone up, but I don't think he has gone up much for me yet. Until I actually physically see him play, he probably won't go up a ton. And I think we will see him in Augusta next year. I'm actually a tiny bit surprised we haven't seen him yet. But, you know, I like what he's done. I'm not going to read too much into it, but I don't think that he's definitely hasn't hurt his stock. He's helped himself a good bit, but he's pretty much just the guy we kind of thought he was going to be.
Yeah, we like him a lot. He's really, really fast. It remains to be seen in full season ball as to whether or not what kind of the production that he's had down there in the Florida Coast League has been a product of that tool that he has, or is if the hit tool is as real as we think it could be, and if he's actually driving the ball with the authority. If he's driving the ball with authority and, you know, able to kind of handle opposing pitchers, like, he doesn't have to hit the ball over the fence, but if he's hitting the ball hard and put it in the corner, that will play anywhere, and there's a place for guys who can hit. And again, it's just that patience. We like him. I imagine he'll go up a couple spots on our rankings, but I don't think we're going to make any crazy adjustments on him or anything like that. The production's been good. But we were already pretty aggressive on him. It's not like he was a guy that we, like, didn't have ranked at all and he was going to jump onto a top 30 list. We already had him on there. So, we like him. We continue to like him. I'm very interested to see what he looks like in full season ball. So the next one is, other than Indigo Diaz, who are some interesting relief prospects in the system? Garrett, who are some relievers that you like?
Quickly, Troy Bacon's done pretty well. He's hurt right now. He's done well this year. You know, he's not a guy that's going to be like an elite prospect, but he's got a good mix of pitches. He could be a middle relief guy. Brooks Wilson's been really good. I like his stuff. I'm not like that, like, hugely high on him, but again, a guy that could be a middle reliever. We mentioned Hayden Deal early, another guy that could be a middle reliever. Trey Riley, I don't like Trey Riley a lot, but he's done well. He has potential. I don't love him a ton. I don't see him as a major league pitcher, but he does have the potential to be a major league reliever. Dysbel Hernandez has fantastic stuff if he can ever do anything with it. And then Justin Yeager has pitched pretty well this year. He's another guy that, like, he's got a live arm. Command is a question. You know, we don't talk about Yeager a lot because he's kind of been stuck on Augusta, and honestly, we kind of avoid watching that Augusta bullpen as much as we possibly can.
That's so bad.
Oh, he's been decent this year. You know, again, the stuff is good. The command is just really, really bad. So it's a guy that you have to – but I think that they like him somewhat. Like, organizationally, I think they like him somewhat. They put him immediately into the closer role at Rome, which kind of – the guys that are in the closer roles are guys that they like. They don't just put guys in that position. So I think that it is a good sign. I think that they somewhat like what they've seen out of him. But, again, a command issue with him.
Definitely – Those are all interesting names. I'm a little bit lower on Yeager than you are. Deal is certainly an interesting name. Trey Riley, I think, has a real chance. I think that that's a major league arm. It's just a question of whether or not that command is consistent. And we've certainly had our hearts broken by Trey a couple times, particularly when he was a starter down there at Rome. But, you know, again, Brooks and, you know, again, if guys like, you know, like Vodnik and Woods end up going back to the bullpen, you know, those guys are interesting as well. Another guy that it's easy to forget, and he's pitched well since he's gotten back from the injured list, Corbin Klaas has looked good, man. Like, he's just looked good. You know, coming back from a, you know, pretty serious shoulder surgery, he's been striking out guys, you know, has had a couple hiccups here and there in terms of appearances and things like that, but nothing that makes me go, you know, that he is not going to be, you know, a really significant pitching prospect for, on the relief side for the Braves. I imagine he'll be back at Triple A next year. He might actually, you know, once the minor league season ends, depending on how long Mississippi season goes, I wouldn't be shocked if he, like, ends up going to Gwinnett and finishes out the season there. He's, again, really interesting arm. I would not be shocked at all if he ends up being a good reliever. Love the fastball. Love the movement that he gets. Really knows who he is as a pitcher. He's constantly trying to improve. Like, it's been a tough couple of years for him just trying to get healthy again off a pretty serious surgery, but overall, like, he's another guy that I find to be really interesting as well. The next one is a fairly short one, and that is Bryce Elder an MLB starting pitcher? What do you think, Garrett? Do you think that Bryce Elder is a major league starting pitcher going forward?
I think not only is he a major league starting pitcher, I think he's would be good enough to pitch at the major leagues next year. Now, I don't know if he actually will, just because there are a ton of pitchers, right? There are a ton of pitchers. But I think he's a guy that legitimately could make the team out of spring training. I mean, he's never going to be a top-of-the-line guy. But he's a guy that can pitch in the 4-5 role and fill up a ton of innings, give you, you know, solid average performance. I love him. I love Bryce Elder. He's done so well this year. He has a great pitch mix. He's efficient with his pitches. He's a great pitcher. I love watching him play, and I think he, of all the pitchers in the minor league system, other than Kyle Muller, he has by far the biggest chance to be a major league starter.
Yeah, I mean, the guy pitches 6 or 7 innings every time he goes out there. My question for him, we knew that the slider was good. I just didn't know how many bats he was going to miss. And like early in the season, I was a little bit like skeptical because there was a lot of ground balls when he was at Rome. But like all of a sudden, he starts missing more bats, and just the fastball improves. Everything starts improving a good bit, and he just starts mixing those pitches really well. And then, you know, goes to Double A, slays down there in Double A, and again goes all the way to Triple A. You know, had one start where it wasn't particularly great, but overall, I mean, just like he is genuinely a good pitching prospect. I would not be shocked at all if he's a major league pitcher. Now, there is the question of, like, what are the Braves going to do with all these pitchers at this point, which has basically been the question they've had for the past 3 seasons now, is, like, what are they going to do with all these guys? Because there's only so many spots that you can have for them, especially now that you've extended, at least for next year, you've extended Charlie Morton. And, you know, but what do you, you know, when does Mike Soroka come back? These are good problems to have when you have backup options like a guy like Bryce Elder. Especially a guy that you don't have to necessarily take up a 40-man spot right away with. But I think he's a major league starting caliber pitcher. I think that he's going to get – that he is going to be a topic of many trade conversations, because I think that teams are going to think that he's really close to being ready for the major leagues. So we think he's a major league starter. I think he has a great shot to be there. I think he could end up being – I think he could end up being as much as a middle of rotation guy. You know, like number one or number two, like that's just such a hard – like you don't – it's almost like it's – You don't believe that someone can do that until they do it. You know, like you can project stuff all you want. Like, hey, this guy's a 98 mile an hour fastball, and a wipeout slider. You know, like he's, you know, this is a frontline starter. And like so many of those guys who just like look like they have quote unquote the stuff just end up flaming out or end up in the bullpen and things like that. So it's hard to project it until the guys do it. But I could see his ceiling as being a middle of the rotation guy, and I don't feel the least bit bad about it. He's like super efficient. He'll give you a bunch of innings. Good innings, quality innings. He misses bats, doesn't walk a bunch of guys. He's just been really, really good. Like, point blank, just been really, really good. So our next question, of the minor league pitchers who have the best chance Who of the minor league pitchers to have the best chance to become a number one or a number two? Speaking of the question that I was literally just, you know, poo-pooing on in the last one. Garrett, who are your guys that you think have the best shot to be number one starter types?
To start, there's nobody in the system, or really in any system, that has more than like a 5 or 10% chance of doing it. It's just so hard to get to that level. Some guys, I'm going to start with three guys that are on the lower end of possibility. Ryan Cusick, the power pitching is definitely there. I don't know if the command or changeup is going to even ever get close to being that. He has a potential. Muller has a potential, but with him being older, not really having a changeup, the command is eh. You know, he could be I could see him fitting as a number two. I do think the boat has sailed on being a number one, but he could be a number two. SCs, if the stuff ticks forward a little bit, or, you know, he has such great command, even at this stage, you know, guys with great command like that, it's, you know, more they're more likely to get to that level. Again, he's a guy I can see being a number two, not necessarily a number one, but he's a guy I can see getting to that level of number two. The two that are easily have the highest potential are Freddie Tarnock and Spencer Strider. Actually, in this regard, in terms of being a number one starter, I'm going to favor Tarnock over Strider, even though I have Strider as the better prospect. Tarnock doesn't have quite the injury history in terms of having the Tommy John surgery. He has a bigger body, what should be a more durable body. He's lanky, so you don't really – I mean, pitchers, you never really know. I do – but both of them are very similar. They have great fastballs. Strider's fastball is better. They have great curveballs. They're kind of about even there. They have both have changeups. We see more of Tarnock's changeup, and I prefer Tarnock's changeup, but both of them have fantastic changeups. Again, both of them is – it's going to be a question of command. I think Strider has better fastball command now, even though it does come and go. I think Tarnock has more athleticism, so you can see him developing better command. Again, neither are particularly likely to get there, but I do think that those two are clearly the top of the crop in terms of future potential. They are the two that you look at.
Yeah, I think you named the right guys. In Cusick's case, I am more in the – I think he ends up as a bullpen arm right now just because I've – but again, like – and I'm trying to temper as much – as best I can what a guy looks like in his draft year after a college season and a layoff and kind of getting used to a role and all that stuff and moving around. But I am a little bit concerned that he ends up as a bullpen guy. But, you know, with that kind of stuff, I mean, when you have a fastball that can run up above 100, like you – that a guy has a chance if he is doing that. I like Muller and Estes quite a bit. Tarnock and Strider is an interesting case. I think I'm on the other end side of the coin there. I think that Strider has a better chance of being a one or a two just because I think that the fastball is so good. It's worth remembering that he has not pitched this many innings in like many years. And like this is like the version of him we're seeing him right now at Mississippi is probably very gassed in a lot of ways. He's thrown a bunch of pitches, and he's still, like, he has these stretches where he's just completely dominant and overpowers guys. And I think that if he was, like, fully kind of conditioned for a full season, which is just impossible to do until you know, continue to lengthen yourself out. And after an injury, it's just a tough thing to do. And he is a power pitcher, so he needs all that energy to generate all that spin to make that power breaking ball work, to, you know, get everything and to get the spin that he wants on that fastball, to get the rise that he wants out of it. But I think that like next year he could be really, really something to watch because he gets a full off season just to kind of get conditioned, rest, but as well as rest, kind of, you know, get completely healthy in terms of not like anything wrong with his arm right now, but just kind of let his body kind of get back to a good healthy place. He can condition himself and then work his way up and then go into full season ball. He has a chance to have a really special season next year because I'm telling you, a well rested and like fully geared up Spencer Strider, I think could very easily end up as the best pitching prospect in the system at the very least. If not, you know, making some noise elsewhere. He's already like among the leaders in the minor leagues of, you know, trying to strikeouts per nine already. And, you know, this is kind of the version of him that's supposed to be rusty and supposed to be tired right now. So I think he could be really special. A couple more questions before we let everyone go. This one should be relatively short. Where does Vaughn Grissom stick defensively? Garrett, where do you think he ends up?
I will say that it won't take a ton. As long as he hits, they may end up just giving him a chance at shortstop, right? Because he is athletic enough to play the position. And if he hits, you can cover up
defensive liability in some form. I think ultimately, it's going to depend on what they do with Dansby, what Shoemake does, if keep Riley at third base or what they do there. I think ultimately he's probably most likely to be kind of a utility guy in the terms of like a Ben Zobrist utility guy where, you know, and again, this is like high level projections because we don't know what he's going to hit, right? I mean, he's still super young, but like if he plays to his potential offensively, he's going to be maybe not as good as Ben Zobrist, but a guy that is going to play a lot of everywhere because they're already setting him up for that because they're playing him all around the infield already. And he's a guy that, you know, I mean, it is a question if this team actually knows how to rest infielders because it doesn't seem like they do, but if they ever figure it out.
They sure don't.
He has the athleticism to play all the positions of the infield. He's played them all at a decent level this year. I think he's been better defensively than we expected him to be. And as long as he hits, they will find a spot for him. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with him being like Martin Prado, where you can put him anywhere and feel like, okay, you're going to get decent play out of him. He's not going to be a gold glover, but he's going to do his job.
Yeah, I think he ends up as a shortstop just because of how the Braves have kind of done things. They just seem to kind of stick guys in the spot. But I kind of hope that you're right in a lot of ways, is that they can kind of move him around. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if, like, Vaughn moves, like, and starts getting, like, appearances in the outfield next year, right? Like, it just wouldn't be that weird. Like you said, if he continues to hit, it doesn't really matter. Like, he's not so special defensively as an infielder. Look, there's nothing about him as an infielder that is like a big red flag or anything like that. You wonder a little bit about the arm strength and arm accuracy at short, but it's nothing like that's super concerning. You wonder if he's going to grow a little bit. Maybe he grows out of short and he ends up having to go to third or second or something like that. Like, he might not have that sign of that loose athleticism to stick there long term. But I think that it's close enough where I am comfortable saying that he ends up as a shortstop. But again, this is the guy that I think that as long as he keeps hitting, like, you know, again, just put him in the outfield, see what he does out there. You know, if the glove isn't something that's like, wow, we really need that glove. He's like, you know, super quick actions. You can see him like being a really big asset in turning double plays and, you know, having really good range one way or the other. Like, just keep playing him as long as he's like average anywhere. Then just let him keep hitting. Let him keep eating at the plate. And again, I could see him in a corner. I don't think he could end up as a center fielder or anything like that. But, like, I wouldn't be shocked if I think he's athletic enough to be a corner guy, too. I think he could play all over, and I think that that would serve the Braves well to kind of let him have that versatility. But, you know, I think he's a shortstop, but I don't think I'm like – that's a low confidence, you know, that's where I think that he belongs necessarily. But I think that's where they're going to keep playing him until they have a reason to move him around, whether it be positional availability as he moves up or, you know, something like that. One last question, Garrett, and that is Kyle Muller was the only major league debut for the Braves this year, lowest of any franchise. This seems like a major shift from previous years. What is your take? Garrett, what is our take on the lack of major league debuts this season?
Well, one, there's kind of a gap, right, in the waves of prospects. So there's kind of a gap where I think next year and going forward, you're just going to see a few guys every year that come up. And also there were so many guys like Contreras last year and Alex Jackson that kind of got called up before they were ready. Bryce Wilson was debatably called up before he was ready. There have been so many guys that they pulled up out of necessity that the guys that normally would be debuting right now when they deserve to debut had already debuted. And so there was no one there, right? Like Kyle Muller was the only guy there. I don't think it's like some sort of like shift in the organizational philosophy. I think they had a bunch of pitchers that they felt reasonably confident in, and they had a bunch of, you know, position players that they felt confident in, and none of the prospects did well enough to push it, you know. Drew Waters didn't go out there and kill it. Jose De La Cruz didn't do all that well, you know, and so the guys that would have gotten called up just didn't do well enough to earn it, and that's all there is.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, like, if you go through, like, the guys who made debuts last year because of, like, weird injury stuff and for, like, really short appearances, you've got Christian Pache, William Contreras, Tucker Davidson's another one, you know, and just, you have these guys that, again, would have normally been, like, high-level debuts and who are rookies that we like this year, that we did like, but they had technically made their major league debuts. I don't think that there's any like organizational shift whatsoever. I think that it's just kind of the debuts that we saw last year were kind of unique case scenarios and not anything that's like, oh, well, the Braves aren't calling back their young guys. And another thing that calling up their young guys anymore. And another thing to consider is that there's just so many guys on this team that are young guys. I mean, like, you can only call up so many guys. You can't just keep calling them up for nothing. And, you know, like, again, Tucker Davidson got his shot. Waskari Noah is another guy who's didn't debut this year. But, you know, is a guy that was highly regarded as a rookie this year, but he made his debut already. And these are not, that's not indicative of an organizational philosophy. It's just that they've already called up so many young guys between that young core that has just existed on the team over the course of the last couple of years. There's only so many spots to put them. And then after that, you had a bunch of guys who had already debuted last year, even in like, just like, again, for a couple games, like in Contreras' case, he wasn't up for very long. Pache wasn't up for very long. You know, he played a couple, like one or two games early on in the last season. And then he played during the playoffs when Ender forgot how to play baseball. And then you have, you know, Contreras, where there was an injury situation where he had to play a couple games when like both Ajax and Darnot were having issues, I think, if memory serves correctly. So it was just kind of like a weird situation where he got called up. But that's, you know, that doesn't mean that, you know, that they changed their philosophy. They seem like they're willing to go with young guys if the situation calls for it. But where they needed the help this year, particularly in the outfield, you know, Pache was both hurt and not playing particularly well. Drew Waters was hurt and hasn't played particularly well. So they had to go with those kind of those veteran guys that they had at AAA to fill those spots where they had those openings come up. Because again, when starters were getting hurt, we saw Tucker Davidson, we saw Kyle Muller, we've seen guys been getting opportunities in that rotation. Just only one of them has happened to not technically make his major league debut yet. Well, Garrett, that's pretty much all we've got for this week. Well, I want to take a moment to thank all of our listeners. If you could please be so kind as to tell your friends and family about the podcast. If you want them to direct them as to where to get this podcast and never miss an episode, just direct them to the Talking Shop podcast feed, which is on every podcast. Well, I say every, most podcast purveyors that I'm aware of anyway. iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, all those, just search Talking Shop. Not only we get this podcast, which is our minor league podcast that comes out every week, but you also get the flagship Talking Shop program hosted by the great Brad Rowland, about half the time by myself as well, along with Scott Coleman, and guests that come on as well. And you also get the Daily Hammer, which is hosted by the great Sean Coleman, which is kind of your daily update podcast, you know, 15, 20 minutes, just gives you a general idea of what's going on a day-to-day basis with the Braves. All sorts of podcast content comes out on that stream. More of that is to become as well. I imagine I'm going to be doing some sort of baseball card collecting type podcast in the relatively near future as we kind of need more things to talk about during the off season. And we're certainly keep trying to leverage that podcast stream because you guys have been absolutely killing it with downloading the podcast, telling your friends, spreading the word about it. It's been great. We really appreciate all the support on the podcast. Make sure you're reading the site as well at talkingshop.com as we wind down our minor league season here, as well as kind of getting into the off season, getting into this playoff push. Just want to make sure that you're keeping an eye on the site as well. Thanks to Garrett again for coming on to the show, for helping me answer all these questions. And until next time, we'll see you on the road.